Over the years, one of the changes that has occurred in the delivery of actual chemotherapy that's given direct into the vein is that the number of staff who administer these drugs have been reduced and extensive training programs have been put in place. And the main reason for this is that 20 to 30 years ago, if a drug accidentally leaked into the surrounding tissues, it could cause a lot of damage. The rare patient may have needed plastic surgery or even an amputation. So as a consequence, what you find with that now is that it's mainly the nurses who deliver all of the intravenous chemotherapy. And even within nursing, it's only select a small group of nurses who've been specially trained to do it. And therefore, it provides safer delivery of chemotherapy to patients. So once it's been agreed between the doctor and the patient that they are to go ahead with treatment, they would be referred to the day treatment unit or to the ward. It depends on the type of treatment. There is a very small number of treatments that are still given as an inpatient. About 98% of our treatments are the day treatment unit. A cycle, and if I look at the most common regimen of chemotherapy for breast cancer, is called FEC. That's a little acronym we have. That's based on the three drugs that we administer for that particular type of cancer. So F is 5-fluorouracil, E is epirubicin, and C is cyclophosphamide. We would then look at how often we're going to give this FEC. So currently, the regimen says it's administered every 21 days, and we would then give maybe 6 cycles. In recent years, since docetaxel came out, we tend to give 3 cycles of FEC, and then we then swap the patient to 3 cycles of docetaxel, which is also given every 21 days. If a breast cancer is diagnosed and it's quite a large tumour and can be more than 3 centimetres, we may decide to do chemotherapy first before surgery. And the idea is to downsize that tumour, to shrink it down. And what we've noticed since we've started using FEC and docetaxel is that the combination of the two different regimens shrinks the tumour so much that it completely disappears on scan, and therefore we've had to start inserting markers in the area where the tumour is, so that at the point when the surgeon comes to do the surgery, they can take away tissue and they know where the tumour was originally. For chemotherapy to be administered into the vein, there's various ways we can do it. One is where we insert a needle direct into a vein in the forearm. The advantage with that is that it's done quickly, but actually it can only stay in place for a short period of time. There are other devices that we can use, and we call these central venous catheters. So I think of it as a long tube of spaghetti, and there are 3 types that we can use. So the first one we have is a PICC, which is peripherally inserted central catheter. That tends to be inserted midway between the elbow and the shoulder. That has to be inserted by a team of specialist nurses under local anaesthetic. And that catheter can be left in place for several months. The next type of catheter we have is called a tunneled catheter, and that's inserted on the chest wall, and that is more complicated. Patients need local anaesthetic and some mild sedation. That's more complicated, but that catheter can last for several years. And then the third type of catheter we have is called a Portacat. Not seen so much here in the UK, is beginning to grow in popularity, but at the moment requires a surgeon to insert it, and the patient needs to have a general anaesthetic for it to be inserted, and likewise for its removal. However, there are processes developing, and there are some places that are able to do it under local anaesthetic. So if we look at FEC and docetaxel, we know epirubicin is very toxic to the inside of the veins and can cause a problem called phlebitis, which is an inflammation of the veins, and that can be very painful and leave patients with an ache or a pain for several months after they finish treatment. And it can also cause hardening of the vein that can reduce mobility of the arm, so they have problems opening and closing, stretching out and closing up their arm at the elbow, and we call that cording. So to prevent that, we now, for all patients receiving FEC, like to insert a PICC line so that we maintain the integrity of those veins. It prevents the pain and the ache and the reduced mobility. Paclitaxel has been around for a long time. When it first started getting used, I had just joined working here in this hospital, and it was in some of the late phase research trials we were doing. Docetaxel is a newer drug, but I likewise have been administering that for the last 12 years, both as a standard treatment for breast cancer, but also as a trial treatment, depending on what research trials we have going on. Paclitaxel is more complicated to administer. There's a greater risk of patients having an allergic reaction to it, so they need to have quite a big pre-medication where we have to give drugs to prevent this allergic reaction. Docetaxel is also given every 3 weeks. We don't have to do the pre-medication intravenously beforehand, but the patient does need to start a steroid drug the day before and then have it the day of treatment and the day after, and that's to prevent some side effects of treatment. They have a similar side effect profile on one level. Peripheral neuropathy will be quite a significant side effect. So that's where patients get pins and needles in their fingers, their toes, their feet. And we have to closely monitor that. And if it begins to affect quality of life or activities of daily living, think about people's lifestyles. If they play the guitar or they play an instrument, we have to take those into consideration when deciding to treat with paclitaxel, or also monitoring the patient during the infusion and certainly in between cycles of treatment, making sure that if the side effect has happened, that the patient has recovered. Sometimes we may have to extend the 21-day cycle to allow patients to recover before we go on with the next cycle of chemotherapy. I think the side effect with both drugs is the risk of infection. So we will give patients quite prescriptive advice about how to watch out for signs and symptoms of an infection and what to do should it happen and who to contact. Nausea and vomiting, not so much with docetaxel, it can be mild, but it's also warning the patient and making sure they've got appropriate medication at home. My analogy for how chemotherapy kills cancer cells is that if you think of us as humans, we go through our life as a baby, toddler, child, teenager, young adult, middle-aged, elderly. And in the same way, a cancer cell goes through various stages of life before it dies. And so when we develop our cancer drugs, some drugs will work on a specific part of that life cycle. So it may hit the teenage phase, or it may be more for the adult phase. And by giving the chemotherapy every so often, every 21 days or over 6 cycles, what you're hoping is that as cells enter a certain phase, and that the drugs, they're exposed to them, and then you kill the cancer cell. And then as you kill that cancer cell, the next cancer cell that's at an earlier stage, by 3 weeks later, it's moved into that phase of the cell cycle. The chemotherapy kills it at that stage. That's just really a very simple explanation of how chemotherapy affects the cancer cells. Patients, how they cope with chemotherapy varies from individual to individual. I think in the first instance, it's how it's affected the patient physically. My analogy for chemotherapy is when our research trials pick out doses of chemotherapy, that's what works well for the average population. But actually, when it comes to giving treatment to people, we can have a good estimate of how it's going to affect them. But for some patients, so my story I liken it to is if I have three men of equal height and equal build standing, and I give them each six brandies to drink or six mugs of strong coffee to drink, actually how that affects each of them will be different. So one man will be nicely merry or feeling a bit, if it's coffee, he's got some palpitations, but not much, he can cope with it. And so he's tolerating it quite well. Another person will fall flat on their face, and another person will be just nicely merry, whatever, have some side effects, but generally coping with it as well. So chemotherapy can be like that. And what we aim for is the middle, where people can tolerate it and that we managing the side effects as best we can. But there, for some patients, the chemotherapy can completely floor the patient, flatten them. So they might have one side effect, they might have two, or just fatigue and just taking themselves to bed. Some of them can be emotional, feeling more tired. If they get a side effect, it can run into other complications that then need managing. So we need to be careful when we're telling patients about chemotherapy up front, what the potential side effects are and how to prevent or manage them. What's important to say is that not every patient will get every side effect, but some people, it can really knock them sideways. And then there's the emotional, there's the financial impact, you know, have they got to continue working? If they're off, do they get paid sick leave? Have they got an income coming in? Then if you're constantly feeling fatigued, what are the burdens of family life? Have you got a young family? Are you a single parent? Are you elderly? Are your family living far away? All of those issues. So then you can get all the other anxieties that can come through, and that can be displayed in tearfulness, not sleeping, not eating, anger, anything like that. So it's a wide, vast range of things that we see, both physical and on emotional level, and it's trying to pin them down and try and address each one as best you can. Especially in the world of breast cancer, once it's suspected, and certainly in the NHS, it actually processes happen very quickly. And so sometimes I feel we're ahead of the processes as professionals, but patients are struggling to catch up. And it's trying to just reassure patients that that's okay. So it's offering that physical, pragmatic advice and then allowing some time for the comfort and being sad and saying, actually, it's okay, go and have a good cry now. Where chemotherapy is going, there will always be a place for the intravenous drugs for the foreseeable future. But in recent years, we have a lot of new, what we call targeted therapies coming out. And this is where, when a tumour is diagnosed and the cells are looked under a microscope, they can see what the differences are between a cancer cell and a normal cell. And then what the new drug's trying to do is targeted that cancer cell for that particular difference. So, for example, Herceptin, there's a particular protein that's found. About 25% of the breast cancer will have a huge proportion of HER2 proteins on the surface of their cancer cell. And the drug Herceptin comes along and prevents the cell developing further. It latches onto this HER2 protein, prevents the cell from dividing, and then the cell dies a natural death. And that's why we have more patients who are diagnosed with a spread of their breast cancer, who are HER2 positive, but are now living for several years because of this drug Herceptin. And also patients who are diagnosed and have Herceptin back at the curative stage, fewer patients are relapsing now compared to 15 years ago. So we have a wealth of new targeted drugs coming out and that are continuing to be developed. With these new treatments, and the thing to remember is with a lot of them, patients stay on them till disease progression. So patients are going to be living longer with cancer, and potentially there will come a time point when cancer and these treatments will be a long-term chronic illness, just like diabetes, asthma, those other conditions that are routinely treated in the home.